Hello and welcome to another episode of the Bitcoin Well podcast. I'm your host Q, and as you have all seen online on Twitter, we are back. I told you last week and here we are. As of the time we are recording, the price of Bitcoin is at $65,000 US, a little bit over $91,000 Canadian. And because we are so back, I am coming to you live from my mother's basement. I am so excited about today's episode. This has been something we have been cooking up for a little bit since we started talking about doing this podcast. I am joined by two very old and dear friends, none other than Joe Consorti from Horizon and Chris Alamo from Simply Bitcoin and a Bitcoin advisor in his own right. Gentlemen, welcome back.
How's it going? It's great to be back, you.
It's been ages. It feels like 2022 again. Very fitting. Yeah. You know, we're near the bottom.
So we're going to go on record now and say that Joe is called the bottom. So everyone hold him accountable for that. If we get lower lows, it's Joe Consorti's fault, as usual.
That's right.
I called 58K. Opti was texting me, and I said it's 58K, and that's our bottom right now, local bottom at least.
Boom.
I think the orange man might do his best to mess with all of us, but that's neither here nor there. As the title suggests, as our thumbnail suggests, we're going to be talking Sailor. I kind of buried this last week very intentionally. I wanted to have this conversation with the two of you today. But first, I want to talk about the implosion out of Korea. For those who have not been following, for those who have not been aware, the Korean stock market just wiped out gains. Roughly 1.2 million leveraged retail accounts were margin called, an estimated 320 to 460,000 accounts in Korea were forcibly liquidated by brokers. Look, this is insane, but to me, the craziest thing is what happened after the fact. And there was a South Korean YouTuber in his 40s running the channel Winners TV with roughly 93,000 subs who was stabbed multiple times in the face and body after the Korean market crash by one of his subscribers, because the subscriber bought the stocks that he suggested and those stocks crashed. Now, Chris, we used to say this all the time. I feel like I have to reiterate this today more than ever. This is not financial advice. Nothing we say can be construed as financial advice. If you want financial advice, please hop on over to bitcoinwell.com/infinite and book a time with one of our executive Bitcoin advisors. But I need to reiterate, I'm coming to you live from my mother's basement. You cannot take anything I say seriously or literally. If I was coming to you live from my private island, sure, great, you should listen to me. But I'm coming to you live from my mother's basement.
It depends on what private island it is, Q.
I was going to say, private islands are kind of a sore subject nowadays.
Hey man, I'm not on the Epstein list. I did see Joe's name a couple times.
Only like two or three times. I just wanted to, you know.
I saw a Joe on there. I don't think it was our Joe here.
I saw a Joe and I saw a Consorti. Not in the same sentence and not together, but like, you know, we can
speculate all day long. But
I mean, yeah. Look, we get it. You were really young. You didn't ask to go there. Get it. It's okay. We don't have to harp on it. But I want to talk more so about like what we're seeing in Korea and the fact that we saw a huge amount of accounts margin called due to leverage. And this has been a longstanding sort of conversation we have in the Bitcoin space of like, hey, be careful with leverage. You will get margin called. We saw it, I think, earlier this year with quite a few people posting when Bitcoin Twitter was not like, you know, as fruitful as it has been over the last 24 hours. But I did catch some of the posts where people who had levered up their Bitcoin at around 100 or above 100K Bitcoin USD price, they started to get those notifications that, hey, you either need to make payments, you need to add more collateral, or you will be margin called. Just high level first, how are we feeling on leveraging up Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I mean, what I'll say about what happened in Korea, it sounds super like consumery of me, but have you guys seen Squid Game season 2? Like, I swear what you just explained to you was like one of the main plot points of season 2. Like the reason he was playing was specifically because he had a crypto YouTube channel and then everything he recommended went to zero. So very strange. I suppose it's a TV show over there. Anyway, you know, it's devastating. I hope that guy recovers. And yeah, it's a lesson in playing with leverage and not playing with leverage, right? You know, particularly with a volatile asset like Bitcoin. One thing I've said very recently is that I've started saying very recently is that Bitcoin is a obviously an extremely volatile asset. It's like a 50 vol asset. It's like you literally do not know what it is going to do the very next day. With that being said, it's very reliable, but it's reliable over longer time frames. So what on earth do I mean by that? How volatile and reliable at the same time? Well, if you go back through history, you can actually, like, with pretty reliable consistency, figure out where Bitcoin's going to top and where it's going to bottom based on the four-year cycle, like nearly to the day, right? Within weeks. That said, on an intraday basis, intra-week basis, on a yearly basis, it's extremely volatile. So, like, we know when Bitcoin's going to top, roughly speaking. We know when it's going to bottom, roughly speaking. But we don't know what's going to happen in between all of that. And that's where people lose their life savings. That's where people, just destroy their lives, is in that middle. What I'll say about Bitcoin-backed loans and, like, leverage, generally speaking, is, look, there are correct ways to do it. And, you know, there are a select few companies out there that I would personally recommend as far as Bitcoin-backed loans are concerned. I won't name them now. But it's like the one thing you want to make sure of, you must understand Bitcoin is an extremely volatile asset. And unless you have a ton of it, like I'm talking 100 Bitcoin, and you need to use that and you don't have any other collateral and you need to use that as collateral for some major purchase, right? It's like an absolute necessity. Like that's the only instance in which I would say, like, okay, a Bitcoin-backed loan is a must. The other thing to consider is, like, does your Bitcoin-backed loan actually have margin call protection and liquidation risk protection, right? Because there are, like, Jack Mallers just announced, Strike has unveiled, like, a basically literally zero liquidation risk Bitcoin-backed loan. Granted, the interest rate is super high, but, like, that's a huge step in the right direction. Salt Lending as well has something that's very similar. Like, it's like you cannot be margin called if you have this specific feature toggled on, which I love, right? So as long as, like, number one, you know what you're doing. And number two, you've mitigated the risk of margin call by using one of those services or any other, you know, that I might not be speaking about now. That's really the only good way to do it. Everything else, you're sort of asking for trouble. And ultimately, like, you wouldn't want to lever up a 50 vol asset in the same way that, like, you wouldn't want to go out surfing when there are a bunch of great white sharks in the water and, like, the riptide is all over the place and, you know, the tide is extremely high. You know, it's like you can do it and you can come out alive, but you've got to be very skilled. You got to be ready to make evasive maneuvers quickly. And you have to, you know, have a lot of expertise as far as it is concerned. Maybe that wasn't the best analogy, but that's sort of my take on leverage in Bitcoin. It can be a really, really bad game, depending on how you do it.
It's almost like someone works in a leverage space of Bitcoin. Chris, I want to let you kind of comment, answer. Are you hiding yourself from public view as a result of the news out of Korea?
No, I'm not. I'm not a leveraged Bitcoin trader. Kind of echoing kind of what Joe was saying, that, you know, a fool and their Bitcoin are parted if they do dumb things many times with leverage. There's other ways that you can lose your Bitcoin. What's the famous HODL quote of, you know, shitcoiners love Bitcoin too. They just love your Bitcoin. So I think, you know, it's best not to use leverage if you don't know what you're doing. Even if you do know what you're doing, I would tread very, very carefully. And a lot of times if you're going to use leverage with your Bitcoin, it should be a very, very small portion of your Bitcoin. Like I said, not financial advice. We're just some guys in, you know, your mom's basement and just chilling. You know, we're not on any private islands. But I think to your point, and also, it's funny that you bring up the Korea of it all, Q. Do you remember the, it was a phenomenon, like basically the Korean mom phenomenon? Did you hear about this? Q, I thought we talked about this. I don't know. Okay, then I'll enlighten you. Back in the late 90s, so right before the dot-com crash and then right before the 08 crash, basically like a lot of they had very traditional, you know, conservative gender roles. Basically the women stayed home and the men would go out and work. And the women were like, well, I want to help the family, like aside from watching the children, cleaning the house, you know, doing the dishes, laundry, like those are very important jobs. But they were like, I want to try and earn like money on the money that my husband's bringing in. So a lot of Korean moms, and it was like a cultural thing where like the stock market was moving based on like message boards, and like basically it's like pre, you know, the definitely in pre 2000 it was like message boards and things like that, that they were like, it was basically pre social media days where the Korean moms were like investigating, and basically like this mom Korean group of women are like, oh, this stock looks good because of this reason, and they were basically like moving markets through retail investors. Ultimately they ended up getting burned, not because of anything that they did poorly, but because of just like the markets moved against them, the dot-com bubble blew up, and like they lost a lot of money in that. And then similar again, the hype kind of, you know, they didn't learn the lessons from 10 years prior, basically did it again in 2008 when they got wiped out with home equity loans, or basically the US market crashing, because the tech bubble in Korea was really bad. But in 2008, they were kind of unaware that the US housing market could also cause a similar crash. Like they weren't seeing the same signs, obviously, as the dot-com bubble blow up, but they were seeing it then. So I thought it was just very interesting that like retail investors were like, you know, trying to work together. And like a lot of their research was very valid and important. And, you know, not just people being like, I like this stock, let's buy it. Like the women were actually like, you know, basically being retail investors and trying to figure out what makes the most sense, and just ultimately getting burned by not their own fault, but because just the market overall moved against them in the early 2000s and then again in 2008. So I thought that was interesting that you brought up the Korea market of all. But I guess my last point, tying this all in together, I'll speak for the three of us. We are all Americans here. So we're like, oh, something happened in Korea, it's no big deal, we're fine. Yeah, things are not the best, but like, you know, there's a conflict in Iran and there's a conflict in Ukraine, and you know, oh, those are in the other parts of the world. Not to belittle him, I know that's near and dear to your heart, Q, and my heart goes out to all everyone that's involved in that those conflicts. But it just shows how globalized the world is, and how, like, you know, like the butterfly effect, the small ripple somewhere else can cause massive devastation in other parts of the world. So I will be wary. It is something that you kind of have to become a geopolitical analyst in order to protect your gains or protect yourself. But yeah, I guess to your point, Q, like this is the time when maybe you should be de-risking the amount of leverage you're taking. I know a lot of people are like, oh, we're at the bottom, we should pump up the leverage, so that way when we skyrocket to the moon, you know, you get to ride those gains. But it can be a very, very volatile path from here to there. So that's just my two cents. Sorry for that long-winded response.
Dude, do not apologize. I just have to, again, I feel like this is going to be the theme of today's episode. Nothing we say is financial advice. Please, please, please do your own research. For the love of God, do not hold any of us accountable for the decisions that you make. But you are welcome to book a time with us at Bitcoin Well Infinite. Just use, feel free to email me, q@bitcoinwell.com, or scan the QR code below. Gentlemen, I do want to kind of shift the topic of conversation to the point of why we're here together. What I don't give a rat's patootie about what's going on with the BIP 110, but we will crack jokes along the way about it. What I do care about is my MicroStrategy bags. You know, this is a man who is the golden child of Bitcoin. We have viewed him as... All right, whatever, Joe. But sure, he's the orange child of Bitcoin. What he says, people hold on to and grasp onto. And yet, at the same time, you know, this is a man who's like putting his money where his mouth is, has been making strides, not only with his own company, MicroStrategy, but then new offerings such as Stretch, Strike, so on and so forth. And for the first time, we saw just last month, he finally sold a little bit of Bitcoin. It was maybe a forced seller, maybe not, but I want to just first high level kind of get your guys' thoughts on what your read is as far as Saylor strategy, and then we'll kind of like dive into the nuance of everything going on there. Chris, we can start with you this time.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the longest time, to your point, Q, like he was always never sell your Bitcoin, never sell your Bitcoin, and never sell your Bitcoin. And now he's selling his Bitcoin. And a lot of people are like, is that cause for panic? Did he lie to us? Is he changing his opinion? I think that it's, you know, I don't think he's lying. I do think he's just trying to take advantage of like basically, what is it? Like tax loss harvesting, basically like their average purchase price of their Bitcoin, I believe is around the 75K mark. And now we're sitting at right now at the recording, what is it? 64, 65, 65. Yeah. Right now. So I think a lot of it is just him just trying to tax loss harvest and just basically like, you know, he's recording a loss and then buying it back again. Or I think that's what we'll see in the long run. I don't know if that was confirmed yet, but that's what I assume that he's doing. But at the same time, I do have this very small position in MicroStrategy as well, Q. So, and like I said, you know, buyer beware, not financial advice. I do think the thing that is tough with MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor is that like, in a way that he kind of is serving too many masters. And what do I mean by that is, like, so at first he was like, yeah, I'm the Bitcoin guy. I'm going to buy a bunch of Bitcoin. You know, I'm going to do well by my shareholders. Then he comes out with all these different offerings. And it's like, at the same time, it's like, do I appease the Bitcoiners? Do I appease the shareholders? Do I appease, like, the long-term debt offerings? Do I appease, like, the bondholders? Do I appease, like, the employees of the company? Like, basically, he's, like, setting himself up where he's, like, in a no-win scenario, which is not a scenario you want to see yourself in. What is it? Strive is tech. I always mix up Strive, Strife, Strafe, whatever all the names are. The one that basically he was offering 10.5% yield on it. And it's like, hey, you buy it, you get this fixed thing. You don't get the upside, but, like, you know, we're paying this out. But then when you read the fine print, it's like, he can suspend these payments whenever you want. And I hate to call out Michael Saylor and the company, but I'll do it as I see it. It's like a lot of their marketing is kind of like nefarious at best, disingenuous at best and like nefarious at worst, in the sense of like, hey, like, we promise 10.5% yield. It's like, yeah, you can promise all you want today, but tomorrow you might have to suspend that. And then the people that are bought this, like, obviously the value of that's going to go down if you drop the dividend or whatever the payout that they call it. So I do think it's like, you want to be very careful with like the way you're positioning yourself. And like, I'd hate to see people like, hey, like, I have throw out a number, $500,000, $100,000, $1 million, whatever it is. I put my family's portfolio in it and I'm getting 10.5% yield on $1 million. So that's, you know, $150,000 or no, $150,000 basically dollars that I'm getting from the yield of that. And basically they get burned in the sense that like, hey, they suspend paying the dividend, or, you know, oh, he's like, hey, I'm trying to buy more Bitcoin, but I'm selling the common stock. Like, I think there's a lot of different, like, he's basically locking himself in, and I think he's going to get burned. While I do think Saylor's a genius, and two, I think he still holds the record for like the biggest losses on Wall Street. I don't know if that changed with COVID, but I still think when we checked on it, he still has the record for the most losses. So obviously Saylor has been, you know, forged in fire and he's kind of gone through it. I still do think he's very smart. I just be wary if you buy MicroStrategy, or if you buy any of their products, like, buyer beware is kind of my thing. Like, I just don't want to see anyone get harmed, not financial advice, but I'm advocating for you to not get burned in not knowing what the other third party risks are. And that's another thing. Like, a lot of it, I still, to my knowledge, they're using Coinbase custody, and it's like, it's something unrelated to Saylor could cause it. Like, you know, how we're talking Korean markets can affect the US, how conflicts in the Middle East can affect our stock markets. Like, Saylor could be doing everything right, perfect thing, and then Coinbase is like, oh shit, we got hacked by like the Lazarus group in North Korea, and like, we lost 200,000 coins. Like I don't know, it's like something crazy, but like, you know, that's just like, you don't know what you don't know. So like, where a lot of Bitcoiners advocate for like, yeah, self-custody, there is a lot of self-responsibility for that. There is a little bit of comfort in knowing like, hey, if I mess up something, that's very different than someone along the line of this custody for Bitcoin messes up something and I lose it by no fault of my own, by no fault of Saylor's, by no fault of X, Y, and Z company or person that they're using. So that's what I say. I'm a big advocate of staying humble and stacking sats.
No, absolutely. And before Joe, I let you respond, I just want to remind everyone who's watching on X, watching on YouTube, Rumble, Zapstream, LinkedIn. If you're not following our channel, please, 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 I need you to follow our channel so my boss knows I am being productive, even though I'm just hanging out, shooting the shit with friends. So please, it also helps more people hear the conversation. Joe, why is Chris wrong about everything he keeps talking about?
No, I don't think Chris is wrong about everything he's talking about. Like, what I'll say is, you know, to Chris's point about the marketing, I totally agree, right? Like, I've said, you know, and it's kind of confusing for some people, not you guys, but like plenty of people in my comment section who are saying, you know, why on earth is this guy so such an avid proponent of Saylor? Why is he defending him so staunchly if he doesn't own any MSTR? I don't own any MSTR or STRC or anything like that. So why on earth am I defending them? Well, for one, I think that people are just really upset that Bitcoin isn't doing super well. And so they're trying to find a villain. They're trying to find a reason as to why it's not doing well outside of, number one, the four-year cycle. Like, I thought it was broken. It's clearly not. Seems like we're going to take that away. Yeah. Number two, like, the macro backdrop sucks. And the only reason equities are doing well is because everyone wants to be allocated during the AI super cycle. That's it, right? You've even seen like capital abandon the major AI names and flip over into chips. And you could bet your bottom dollar that if we do continue shifting risk off, if inflation does prove to be a problem, because the only reason we got a print that actually was lower was because Hormuz was open for a period of time and oil went down and now oil is spiking again. So we may, there are certainly risks this year, like as far as recession is concerned, as far as risk off impulses. But it's like, you can bet your bottom dollar that at some stage that risk capital is going to rotate back into Bitcoin. Anyway, like that's kind of the reason why Bitcoin has been dropping. But a lot of people have been pointing at Saylor and Strategy and the Strategy complex. Now, like, I don't take any, you know, people can take issue with like the products themselves. They could say, you know, like they don't like the way that they're marketed. And I you know, tend to agree with that. Like, I think the marketing can certainly be improved. But where the argument sort of breaks down for me is like a lot of people were out and about calling for a death spiral. So like, I love James Lavish to death, and all of the work that he's done for the Bitcoin community is just so massive. But like, he sort of popularized this term, which isn't like, he didn't make up the term, obviously. Like, it's been a term on Wall Street for decades. I would know, I'm 50 years old, but no, it's been a term on Wall Street for decades, this notion of a death spiral. Basically what it posits is like, if your liabilities continue to exceed your ability to raise capital, then what you will do is continue to issue more liabilities. Then the market will demand a higher interest rate, so on and so forth. And like, your interest basically eats you, and then your company becomes worthless. So it's typically this happens quite quick in the corporate world with junk bond issuers. But the most popular example of it is actually the US government. So a lot of people point to the increasing debt. Obviously, we just passed the debt ceiling resolution not too long ago, and now we're about to hit $40 trillion in debt. And so people will point to the fact that we have really high interest rates and say that that's a classic example of a debt spiral. And in a way, it is. It's basically a snake eating its own tail. And you become a forced liquidator over time of whatever underlying assets you hold, unless you have a money printer like the United States does. The problem with that is that, Chris, to your point, like, it's unfortunate that these you know, these preferred equities, like, they're not technically obligations. So the dividend can be suspended and they technically don't owe shareholders anything. By the same token, that's kind of the reason that they can't actually become a forced liquidator of their Bitcoin as a result of these instruments, you know? And so it's like, it is the unfortunate thing for shareholders, but it's the reason that Strategy will never become a forced liquidator of Bitcoin. They do have some debt, and I'll speak on that in a second. But also it's like, to the point of, you know, many people will say like, okay, well, you know, They're in a bind. They will suspend the dividend. It's like, if you have the ability to raise capital basically ad infinitum at a relatively low interest rate compared to the forward returns, projected returns of the asset you're buying, like, I would hammer that all day long. I would maintain that interest rate so I could attract that capital and buy more of the asset that's yielding a lot or that's growing really fast. So that's the first thing. And then basically, like, a lot of people were pointing to STRC declining from $100 and saying, guys, look, at this is the next Terra Luna. I'm super duper smart. And like, nothing happened. And now it's moving back up. It's like, oh, gee, lo and behold. And this is sort of, it's sort of proven by two things. Like, we all know that yield is inverse to price with fixed income products. Like, when we say, oh, the bond market's selling off, we're talking about US Treasury yield spiking. The proof is in the pudding that, like, the only reason for the sell-off was because investors, like, number one, I'm sure some investors were spooked, but for the most part, they just wanted a higher yield. Like, if you look at Sato, which is a competitor product to STRC, higher yields, it's basically at $100 today. Like, it's very close. And like, all they did to fix their problem was just raise the yield. And now it's like above, you know, well above 90 or 95 or whatever. And so, and then Strategy did the same thing. They're like, all right, we're going to increase it from 11.5, I think, to 12%. And lo and behold, like, you know, it started rising again the next day. We're still only at around 90. But it's like, the fact remains, whenever a fixed income product sells off, it's literally just the market telling you they want a higher yield. That's it. And so, you know, they're correcting it. So like, the thing I took issue with was just like, the people who were saying that Strategy would be a forced liquidator of their Bitcoin, that the company was at risk. And most importantly to me, because, like, again, I don't own any of the company. Most importantly to me, they were saying that this poses systemic risk to Bitcoin. And that's just not true, right? Like, and so it's like, it's, I'm not really fighting with the other Bitcoiners. I'm more so fighting with the people like Peter Schiff and other, you know, Margaritaville people, boomers, I call them Margaritaville people. You know, who are saying that, like, oh, geez, guys, Bitcoin is worthless. It's propped up by one buyer. It's going to zero. Strategy is going to be a forced seller. And it's like, that's just not true. you know. So you can take issue with the products, you can take issue with the marketing, and I certainly do take issue with the marketing to some degree. There were four separate instances where it was likened to a money market fund. I don't think that should have happened. You know, as far as systemic risk to Bitcoin, like, they don't exist, you know. And then, like, the debt that they actually have, so they retired all of their convertibles that were over 0.675%. And the only convertible debt that they have like an 8% leverage ratio, actually like 7.5%. Look at their website. Now that Bitcoin's at 65 grand, meaning the value of their assets is vastly larger than the value of their debt. The value of their debt and all their obligations that they're that they need to pay is only 7.5% of their total asset base, of their total Bitcoin. So the question becomes, okay, like, when does that debt come due? Well, one tranche of their $6.7 billion worth of convertible debt, the first tranche comes due in 27 months. So 27 months, the first tranche of their convertible debt is due, or they need to buy it back, rather. Not, it doesn't mature, it doesn't become due. They need to buy it back. That's the way the converts work, because they don't want to allow those to actually convert to shares in the company. Okay, so what do they do? Like, you know, what's the interest rate? Well, it's a 0.675% interest rate. It's literally free money. And it's only $1 billion. So the only way they would become a forced liquidator of any Bitcoin is if they couldn't raise another dollar from capital markets. Somehow, some way, they drain their entire US dollar reserve between now and then, which they probably will, and continuously replenish it. And Bitcoin stayed exactly where it was for 27 months, right? Thus completely destroying their ability to raise another dollar from capital markets. So, like, the bear case for Bitcoin from a strategy perspective, and even the bear case for strategy, right? I'm not as interested in talking about, like, oh, what's strategy going to do, right? Like, I'm more interested in, like, can strategy have a deleterious impact on Bitcoin? Like, did it over the last couple of months because of the false negative headlines that they were a systemic risk to Bitcoin? Yeah. But, like, from an actual mathematical capital structure perspective, no. So that's basically where I sit. You know, it's like, there are people who are right on both sides, but there's this massive contingent of people who are just saying the most obscene garbage stuff for clicks. And then, like, 2 or 3 years from now, they'll be totally quiet and nowhere to be seen. And they'll move on to the next thing, which might be, like, Joe Consorti is a systemic risk for Bitcoin. So I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe I am. Yeah. I mean, I do want to clarify something. Chris pointed something out that I also need to point out. I am a shareholder in MicroStrategy. So I am talking my book a little bit here for myself. To me, this is, like, the people complaining about what's going on with MicroStrategy come off like, this is your first cycle. Those of us who are like what you're saying about the marketing, sure. Like, Saylor is selling his stock. He is talking his book when he talks MicroStrategy, as they should. Like, as a shareholder, I want you to do that. That is your job as CEO. Calling out any publicly traded companies who are CEOs. Mind you, Bitcoin Well, publicly traded in the US, Canada. We're awesome. We're great. Check out our latest perspective. But other publicly traded CEOs, your job is to promote your company stock.
Wait, really?
I know, it's a crazy idea. I know. Now, here are some kind of, like, details for myself that I'm paying attention to that I care about. Like, someone who's been in this space, we've watched the MNAV, the multiple of net asset value, explode during bull markets and contract during bear markets. This is a natural thing that happens with the price of Bitcoin, because the hopium that everyone gets to smoke when we're ripping in price, people are like, the cycle's over. You have fools like Joe Consorti going on air being like, the 4-year cycle is dead. It's over. Like, number go up forever. And then you have, you know, sane people like myself who are like, we'll see.
That's true. I also told everyone to buy the absolute top. I said, guys, the 4-year cycle is over. We're going to a million. Mortgage your house. And then, like, 100 people lost their homes. So,
I mean, look, you're at that point, you are just being a salesman and, like, talking your book, but we'll get to Horizon in a second. I know you have obligations to work, as do I. So you will get your shill in due time. But I want to go back to the MNAV of it all, because I think that, to me, is the most important thing that people overlook when you invest in publicly traded companies that are essentially Bitcoin treasury vehicles. Mind you, this cycle is different in the sense that you really had Grayscale. you only really had Grayscale, and then like MicroStrategy started their Bitcoin accumulation strategy, and then made a full pivot to being a Bitcoin treasury company and like ignoring their actual like bread and butter business. But I think, again, as a reminder, during the 22 bear market, we saw the MNAV of all of these stocks crater to below one, which essentially means that the market itself is valuing the company's stock as less than what the value of the asset they hold, i.e. Bitcoin, is. Now, there are like discrepancies right now in MicroStrategy's MNAV, depending on if you use, I believe it's market cap or enterprise value. I think if you use market cap, it's at 0.77. If you use enterprise value, it's at 1.11. So we're like below a one to me is like, this is a great buy. It doesn't guarantee that it doesn't go lower, but it means that the market is undervaluing the Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And all it takes is the next bull run, and you start to see an MNAV back to what we saw in this most recent run up. MicroStrategy had a 1.8 MNAV. So I think a lot of the critiques we see are, bear with me, because, you know, for those of you who don't know me, I'm not nice to Bitcoiners. Like, I say what I say, and I will bully you until you cry about it online and block me.
He even tripped a guy at Bitcoin 2025, guys. Deliberately. I'm kidding. It wasn't deliberate.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. But, like, this is part of the cyclical nature of the four-year cycles. When we have the market go down, you know, you have Bitcoin Twitter fighting amongst itself over absolutely silly things, although the BIP 110 of it all like may not be as silly as, you know, past cycles. But to me, like, that has always been my bear market indicator more so than price. And then what are we seeing online? Everyone is attacking Bitcoin and Saylor, trying to be like, oh, he's bad for Bitcoin. It's like, who are we to say what is right or wrong? Like, I believe that so long as you are trying something, you are doing good. And whether your intentions are malicious or not, like, I'm not the judge, jury, or executioner on those things, but I do appreciate and understand from a TradFi sense why Saylor is doing the things he's doing. Do I agree with them? Maybe not. That's why I don't buy any of the other derivatives, but I do hold MicroStrategy because long term, no different than Bitcoin, I think this can be it. Like, I don't leverage my Bitcoin. But to me, MicroStrategy is a leverage play on Bitcoin because public market traders like to overvalue an asset during bull markets and undervalue an asset during bears. Now, I'm cash poor like any good Bitcoiner, but this would, in my opinion, not financial advice. I'm literally about to say things that are not financial advice, and I'm going to start and end it by reminding you, I am coming to you live from my mother's basement. Do not take anything literally here. But like, this is a great opportunity to buy buy MicroStrategy as well as Bitcoin. Not financial advice. If you want, please reach out to us at bitcoinwell.com/infinite and book a time with one of our executive Bitcoin advisors to discuss your Bitcoin allocation strategy. But like, I think that there is a cyclical nature that we will, until it's broken, this is a four-year cycle. And I will not buy the hype during the next bull run that this is going to be different for X, Y, and Z reasons. And I will always go back to, I brought this up last week with Tatum. Bitcoin doesn't care what the government does, and it definitely doesn't care what the US government does. China is the best case study example of this because in May of 21, they banned Bitcoin mining. Bitcoin's price in the short term reflected that. And in the long term, even with the current drawdown, we're still, I believe, 30% higher than where the price was when China banned Bitcoin mining today, right now. So these are things that I continuously will like harp on and say, like, what the government does is not going to be the thing that moves the price of Bitcoin. I sent a tweet out this morning because this will forever be my stance. Bitcoin is the separation of state and money. So all of you on Bitcoin Twitter, all of you on Twitter right now watching us, like, throw a comment, tell me that I'm wrong, that I'm off base, or that I'm just an idiot. But simping for the government to do something because you think that's going to move the price of Bitcoin is so silly. It's so silly to me. But I'm taking us on a side quest for a second, and I want to bring it back to the strategy of all. I'm talking MNAV, Joe. Why does that matter? Why does it not?
Oh, you asked me the question, why does MNAV matter?
Yes, or not. Like, am I off base, like, actually valuing that or paying attention to that over anything?
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, here's the thing. It's like, MNAV does matter. Think about it this way. Like, basically, for anybody who's looking at strategy and saying that they're going to have less than 1x MNAV in perpetuity, then you're valuing their business of basically creating these products for the fixed income market at zero. You're valuing it actually at negative. So you are saying that by creating these financial instruments that essentially are a funding mechanism for Bitcoin purchases and offer an extremely competitive yield in the fixed income market in actually a very safe way, judging by Bitcoin's historical growth rate, of course, then you're valuing that that business at negative one, right? Which is kind of, I was going to say a much more crass word, but we are on air. So I'll say that's kind of stupid.
Yeah, please, children, watch this show. So please, yes, no,
of course,
nothing too crazy.
So, you know, it's like, ultimately, that's kind of a silly position to take in my mind. So yeah, MNAV does matter. And effectively what you're looking at when the stock is below 1x MNAV is, unless you believe that the corporate risk associated with strategy will always be a massive net negative relative from a dollar perspective, relative to their $60 billion worth of Bitcoin, then, like, unless you believe that, then it is literally always a buy below 1x MNAV. Again, I don't own any strategy, but it's like just from a purely mathematical standpoint. So unless you are like seething at the mouth, Peter Schiff, I hate Bitcoin, I don't like Michael Saylor, it's genuinely always a buy below one. Again, unless you believe the corporate risk from a dollar perspective literally outweighs $60 billion worth of assets in the balance sheet. And then, you know, it's also very important too, right? Because if they plan on using ATM in order to fund Bitcoin purchases in the future, having a very healthy MNAV, you know, above one, closer to two, ideally above two in a really good bull market, it's important, right? If, you know, if someone is to own the MSTR common, then like the value prop of STRC is kind of self-explanatory. The value prop of the MSTR common is that you want sort of levered Bitcoin exposure. And like, how are you going to get levered Bitcoin exposure if the MNAV is just one-to-one? If the company is trading always in line with the value of its Bitcoin holdings, there's no major value prop for owning the company unless you just want to fund the thing that is creating this fixed income product, in which case, like, by all means. But from a just a dollar-for-dollar perspective, it sort of needs to be there as far as creating incentive to own the common is concerned. But I digress. That's sort of my two sats on that piece.
And I just, again, want to remind everyone, nothing we say here should constitute financial advice.
Yeah. Nothing the other guys say here, but everything I say, I'm kidding. No, nothing I say is financial
advice. Joe, I don't need your wife calling me up one day saying you caused him to get stabbed by a crazy person who was watching your stream.
I thought you were going to say we got sued and we have to move in with you in your mom's basement.
That'd be a party. No. Q wants that to happen.
Definitely not. No one is coming and partying in my mom's basement. Pause. I'm putting you both in timeout for that. I also just want to like talk about the fact that ultimately, like, I think all of us are on the same page on this. Paper Bitcoin is still paper Bitcoin, and MicroStrategy is paper Bitcoin. The best thing that you should be doing is allocating to real Bitcoin that you put in self-custody. And that in and of itself, you know, should be the majority of your portfolio. Like, I will always share the way I invest because I like to be public about these things. For me, MicroStrategy takes up a tiny fraction of my overall portfolio, and the vast majority of my allocation is in Bitcoin that I put in self-custody.
I would concur with that. The one last point I'll add is I was just kind of looking at the MSTR stock right now, and right now their market cap's 35.5 billion or thereabout. And then when you look at just the Bitcoin on their balance sheet right now at the current price of Bitcoin at 65,000, their Bitcoin on their book is 54.8 billion. That excludes the $3 billion in cash that they have on hand. So, like, to Joe's point, you know, the $60 billion or more that they have on assets, you know, obviously the market or the stock is way down from what a lot of people that own it think it should be. And also their MNAV is reflected in that as well. So, not financial advice, but just kind of pointing out what I see on with the numbers.
The one other thing I want to hit on super quick before we jump forward is the whole paper Bitcoin thing. That's sort of, and it's like, again, like own Bitcoin and self-custody is very important, but the idea that saying like MSTR is paper Bitcoin, there's a fruit fly flying directly in front of my face. Fascinating. It sort of posits that only on the Bitcoin World podcast, guys. It basically posits that like MSTR is being marketed as an alternative to Bitcoin, or STRC is being marketed as an alternative to Bitcoin. I want to be abundantly clear. Like, I'm not saying that. Q's not saying that. Chris is not saying that. And I don't think anyone who, I mean, maybe there are some people, but I don't think anybody who's buying MSTR actually thinks that, you know? I think even the most, I take issue with that argument.
I kind of agree with Q here.
No, see, I'm going to push back. I'm not even going to let you go on your roll. I want to push back on that. We live in an echo chamber. And Elon, longtime listener, thank you so much for taking my personal DMs seriously and fixing the algorithm. You're all welcome. Everyone watching on Twitter, you need to thank me personally. Elon, who is watching the stream with all of you live right now. This was our interaction DMs. I'll post proof of this later. Look, we live in an echo chamber. Our echo chamber just got stronger. Everyone that we see talk about MicroStrategy talks about it, Joe, in the way that you talk about it. Chris, if you have MicroStrategy's information pulled up, like, can you just quickly shout out what the total shares floating is? Because I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, give me a sec.
Just pull it up when you can for a hot second. Sorry that I'm making you do this. But, like, I go back to the fact that the majority of holders in any public equity, all of the ETF products, all MicroStrategy products, that the majority of those holders are not Bitcoiners. They are, you know, some form of or another of, you know, some fund, some Wall Street investor, something else that is the majority holder of these stocks and assets. Always. I will always orient to that. Retail is not the majority shareholder of MicroStrategy. But that's all I wanted to say to push back. Because Joe, you still haven't drank from that disgusting drink yet. So that's the only way I can bully you right now.
No, I did. I actually finished it. I don't think you were noticing it, but I finished the entire thing and I tossed it.
I didn't.
But what I'll say is, like, even to that point, yeah, you know, Bitcoin is aren't the majority shareholder of MicroStrategy. So then it's even like that actually bolsters the case that, like, these people know they're not buying Bitcoin. Like, you think an institutional trading desk would mistakenly buy Strategy because they think it's one for one Bitcoin exposure? No, they buy it because they think it's levered Bitcoin exposure. Exactly. Maybe like some schmuck with a Robinhood account, not to rag on schmucks with Robinhood accounts. Maybe some dude with a Robinhood account will mistake it, but I think
we can make fun of Robinhood.
I think like 9 times out of 10 people know exactly what they hold, you know? So like, that's one of the other things, like all the death spiral people were saying, oh my gosh, guys, Thaler should go to prison. And it's like, that's kind of ridiculous. He was like, oh my God. It's like, you know, people are saying, oh, well, he's, you know, marketing this way and that way. And he, like, it's just a paper claim. It's like, yeah. I think basically everyone is well aware. I don't think Michael Saylor has said once that, like, you know, he's going to allow people to transfer the Bitcoin per share that they have into cold storage, you know, like that, you know, but that's what the strategy detractors are sort of speaking like. They're almost speaking as if he's been putting people in this massive rube that somehow they're buying self-custody Bitcoin. Like, to my knowledge, that just hasn't occurred. So anyway,
I want to also just point out, Chris, thank you for tracking down 351 million outstanding shares, 78.2 million preferred. And here's, like, again, context is important. Quick Google search. There are 460 million Bitcoin addresses that have been created. Analysts estimate anywhere from like 850,000 to 950,000 individuals hold one full Bitcoin. Like, this is just, I Google search this. This is the AI Google response to these questions. But like, there are technically less Bitcoin holders than there are total shares of MicroStrategy. Now, like, I don't hold this one share, so maybe an irrelevant data point to bring up, but I'm just trying to confuse everyone and, again, remind you all just to buy real Bitcoin. This, to me, just, again, reads like algorithmic trading, Joe, to your point. And like, I had this conversation with my cousin last week because he was like, dude, I think we should buy some oil futures because only God knows and Trump what he's about to do with Iran. And as we've seen, like, oil futures seem to be like a crazy market to play in. And I told him, I was like, look, you're not only dealing with insider trading, you're dealing with bots. Like, you have an algorithm that you're trading against, not a human being. And when an algorithm that's coded to trade an asset or a stock like MicroStrategy in a certain way, when it reaches either a specific price or whatever criteria it breaks below, it becomes a natural seller without human oversight. And that's what you, that can cause these significant drawdowns to happen in real time. That's what essentially is called like a margin call, except instead it's a bot call, if you will. Or in other words, like, you know, it's the inverse of what we saw with GameStop and a short squeeze. It's the downside risk because you have algorithms that are trading in and out of these stocks so many times.
Or right? Even you have like a lot of these hedge funds buying the information of the trades that are going in, and they're putting in their positions prior to, like, in size prior to the people that are subordinate to them or that are lesser value. So it's like, oh, we see that, you know, $100 million, or throw out a number. Oh, so we're gonna trade 200 million of this to get in front of them to, like, basically, you know, take advantage of the selling or the buying or whatever. So yeah, to your point, Q, like, not only you're dealing with algorithms, you're dealing with these hedge funds that have information that you don't have access to, buying from Robinhood or whatever, these trade desks that they're getting in front of trades and stuff.
Yeah. I do want to just, again, like, really, really reiterate, given the topic that we started with was a YouTube streamer getting stabbed because he shared stock advice. Nothing we say here is financial advice.
Guys, please don't stab me. I've made like 20 videos now about how Bitcoin 4-year cycle isn't dead. If it does wind up bottoming, please don't stab. But then again, I carry, so good luck. Anyway.
But ultimately, like, whatever we say about MicroStrategy, like, we're just three fools talking to one another about this, that we're just letting you guys be a fly on the wall. Paper Bitcoin will never be superior to Bitcoin and cold storage. If you're in America listening, just remember Bitcoin Well is the only publicly traded Bitcoin exchange and the only non-custodial exchange that exists. Go ahead and log on to bitcoinwell.com/signup to create an account today. And if you want to talk a larger Bitcoin purchase or your allocation strategy, go to bitcoinwell.com/infinite to talk to one of our Bitcoin advisors today. Look, we've got a little bit more than 10 minutes. I do regret the time that I booked this because, yes, there's a huge game in 12 minutes that, sorry, Chantel, I will be watching while I eat lunch and roll calls. Just bear with me on that one. So I want to, before we wrap up the conversation on MicroStrategy, Joe, Chris, let you guys kind of touch on anything else that we didn't talk about here. I feel like we kind of like dove into it a lot. One thing that I'm going to hold you guys to it, I want accountability on this, is if and when MicroStrategy will join the S&P 500.
I mean, I'll add comment on that. I think that a lot of the S&P 500 and the Dow and a lot of those, I mean, there's like, you know, the Saylor conspiracy gate. So now this is more for helping Saylor, that like there's conspiracies to keep them out of the indexes and stuff. I don't know. Are we going to do like a bet here, or you're trying to figure out when? Like, I do think it's
one,
like,
full Bitcoin, Chris.
What? No.
You know what? You know what we'll do? Because we did have the video queued up, Chris. I mean, Zach, can you roll the tape? This is going to be our bet. I want to bring it back.
And I lost the bet, so now I have to eat a shoe. I used the table saw to cut the base of the shoe off. Then I actually sanded the finish of the shoe off because the, you know, it has like waxes and oils and stuff. I'm left with this leather. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cut this up into little pieces, and then I'm going to mix it in with some chili, which I have a can of right here.
Cut the tape. That's the bet I want, Chris. I want you to bet eating a piece of shoe.
I'm not that crazy. I don't know. we'll bet like a round of golf or something like that. So that way we all have to get together and hang out.
Perfect.
That's a lose for me.
You're bad at golf, or you don't want to
buy? I'm so bad at golf.
We get to hang out. We'll figure it out off air. But I don't know. Right. Like, I do think that, like, There was, I guess even last year, there was like reason to believe that MicroStrategy was going to get into the S&P 500 index. I don't know the rules. It was like you needed like 6 quarters of growth. You needed like a different, you need a certain market cap. I think it needed to be over 11 billion at least. You needed like all these different criteria. And it seemed like MicroStrategy was going to meet it. Obviously, the committee is the ones that ultimately decide who gets in and who gets out. And then it seems like they were kind of, they weren't put in for whatever reason. So I do think they have like a headwind. I think it'll happen eventually. I just don't think it's going to happen. Like I'd venture to say like even in the next 2 years, I don't know. That's just speculation. But like, if I had to guess, probably like not before 2028. So I don't know if the bet here is if they get in prior to December 31st of 2028, you know, whoever takes that side versus if they get in after, I guess I'll take the after on, or the over on that, but I don't know what your thoughts are.
So you're saying after December, 2028.
After December 31st, 2028, I do think MicroStrategy will.
So 2029 is the earliest you think they could be in.
I think they can get in. I think they can get in earlier. I just don't think it's going to happen until then. But that just.
Joe.
Dang. All right. Well, I guess I have to take the. I guess I have to take the under. So all right. I'll do that. And if I lose, I guess.
Cool. I'm on Chris's side on this. So.
I'm also on Chris's side, but I guess like someone has to sort of.
I mean, unless you want to adjust the terms, if you want to say a later date, but then you just got to carry this bet longer.
Okay. Live a little.
No. Here's what we'll do. Let's move it a year. So I could see it happening in 29. Would you take 2030 or beyond?
No, too late. I think, you know, here's the deal. It's like, I agree with you guys. I think strategies included in the S&P 500, even though they've done literally everything the committee has asked for, isn't going to happen soon because they're just going to move the goalposts. It's like, we've always seen with any committee or whenever there is a human involved, and it's not like a systematic if then decision, the goalposts always get moved, you know? COVID, prime example, you know, 2 weeks to slow the spread. And then it turned into, okay, guys, not 2 weeks anymore, but like social distance. Okay, guys, not just social distance. You're not allowed in any public space whatsoever. And then if you are, we're going to arrest you, you know? And that happened for like 4 years, right? So it's like anytime there isn't an if-then systematic decision to be made, the humans will always choose to push the goalpost. So chances are that's what's going to happen. And also it's like, I think there's an assumption, like they know that strategy would just completely eat the lunch of the other companies in the index. And like the flywheel of strategy is just simply too strong. They don't really want that to happen for their index. And so I tend to think, unfortunately, that it's going to take a while before we actually get inclusion, but we will at some point. But I mean, they satisfied all of the things the committee was looking for. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
Okay. Chris, real quick before you answer, would you take the under on 2030?
Me? Would I take the under on 2030?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay, perfect. I'll take the over on this, and I'll explain why. We've talked a little bit about this, like openly and privately. I believe that Bitcoin has sadly become this politically charged and polarizing topic, especially here in America. And I don't anticipate the Republicans to hold on to Congress. I think they will lose both the House and the Senate during this election cycle. I do anticipate whoever runs for president in 28, sadly, I hope it's not Gavin Newsom, but I don't anticipate, short of it being Thomas Massie, which honestly, even if Thomas Massie runs and he'd have my vote in a heartbeat, I don't think he would win. I do anticipate the Dems to regain control of, you know, DC for a period of time. And I think because of that, I don't think for the next 4 years, once they regain control, anything can be done positively for Bitcoin because Bitcoin has been tainted by Trump. Whether you agree with what he's done or not is irrelevant. I'm looking at what the narrative is and can be. We saw a shift from Kamala's campaign. I still think that the general mass of Congress will view Bitcoin negatively, and that will prevent MicroStrategy from joining any of these index funds, the broader ones like the S&P 500 that we're talking about, for example, until the Republicans regain some form of House, Senate, or even the presidency. So I will take the over on that. And then Chris, I'll let you sound off.
Sorry, what was the question, or what was the last sound off for it?
Well, you've now taken the under of it will be MicroStrategy will join one of these index funds before 2030.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. It's complete speculation. I do kind of agree with your sentiment that I do think the Dems are going to win both the House and or basically the win seats in both Senate and Congress. I do think that, you know, I guess it will be tainted by that, but it's, I think a lot of people are have been hampered by like the economic impact over the last 6 years for sure. And I think if the Dems be like, yo, Trump liked Bitcoin and, you know, he liked, you know, basically grifting off his movement, which is completely true. I do think that if the Dems are like, hey, we're going to punish Bitcoin and the crypto industry in an industry that's already been hampered down, I do think a lot of people will be like, yo, I'm already on the ground. Like, don't kick me when I'm down. Like, I do think like Bitcoin and broader crypto, I know we're not big into crypto here, but like, I do think the broader US, a lot of people like are trying to find hope in that, in like Bitcoin and crypto, to the point where like, I do think there might be a lot of pushback. Like, I do think Trump could be like, hey, I kind of won the crypto vote in 2024. And I think if the Dems push back, like as a counter to Trump, that's only gonna like work against them. So like, I think maybe beginning, like Q, to your point, they'll be like, hey, we're pushing against Bitcoin because Trump grifted off it, completely true. And then, but then I think a lot of their constituents are gonna call and be like, dude, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, yeah, you can try and indict Trump, but like, I don't think, you know, by harming the industry, you're harming your voting bloc or like the everyday Americans. So I do think there'll be pushback, like where in 2020 or 2021 with like the Biden administration kind of doing Operation Choke Point 2.0, I think those days have come and gone. So while they might try and get like victories against Trump and his administration, I do think the everyday people like Bitcoin and crypto are more ingrained nowadays in like Bitcoin mainstream. I know it's kind of gone by the wayside a little bit with AI and everyone's talking about AI and chips and AI, but I do think like at the end of the day, people still kind of they're aware of it. They know about it and they don't want it to be harmed as part of their portfolios. So I guess that's my my optimistic side why maybe strategy will get in before 2030.
Hey, I'm here for it. I think you're both wrong and I can't wait to play a round of golf here in Los Angeles funded by the two of you. Joe, I do need to let you do your job for 30 seconds. But before I do, I just want to remind everyone watching on Twitter, please be sure to subscribe or follow our new our channel, YouTube, like and subscribe down below. And of course, if you want to buy real Bitcoin from the only non-custodial exchange in the US available all around the world, hop on over to bitcoinwell.com/infinite, book a time to speak with one of our Bitcoin advisors today. Joe, you have 30 seconds.
Beautiful. Yeah, guys. So thank you so much for tuning in. I immediately jumped to doing a sign off as if this was my show, but thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Check out Horizon. You can see right there, I'm with Horizon and we help you convert your home's equity into Bitcoin. It's very cool. It's a really, really neat thing. So go to joinhorizon.com. We're available in select US states now. Hop on a call with me. We could talk about it. Also check out my YouTube channel. If you're watching this on YouTube and you found it valuable, feel free to go up there in the search bar after this show. Type in Joe Consorti, check out some of the other videos. And then to the point of what you were just discussing, I totally agree, unfortunately. I think it is a losing strategy for the Dems to try to be anti-Bitcoin. Like they tried that with Liz Warren, and Liz Warren's whole anti-Bitcoin thing kind of got squashed. Obviously, the Dems are less avowedly pro-Bitcoin. But then again, they are pretty like, They always, regardless of what the issue is, if Trump said, like, I want to try to cure cancer, the Democrats would create an anti-cure cancer task force, it's
100%.
That said, it's a huge losing strategy for the Dems to try to be anti-Bitcoin. So if they try that, you know, best of luck. Unfortunately, I think the Dems are going to take the House and the Senate because the Republicans did absolutely nothing while they had total control. As per usual, they're addicted to losing. Thank goodness. I can't wait for President AOC in 2028. I'm kidding. 2028. I'm going to vote for him again. I'm kidding.
Chris, who wins today? Who wins Sunday?
Ooh. All right, today, I do think Argentina get it done against England, but it's going to be close. I called early. Before Lamine Yamal was hurt, I was like, I think Spain are the favorites. Then he was hurt. I didn't know how bad the injury was. So then I said France are the favorites. And then when I knew he was playing again, that this sounds like I'm flip-flopping. I was like, Spain are still the favorites to win. And they showed it against their class against France. I think Spain is they're such a good team across the board. So I think Spain gets it done, whether England or Argentina advance. Unfortunately, it's not coming home, Q. It's not coming home.
I've been a jinx this whole time. I mean, look, my Twitter profile picture is me at the last World Cup in my Messi jersey. So, like, I sound silly saying this. As an Arsenal fan, I'm rooting for all the Arsenal boys to win it. I would love an England-Spain rematch of the Euros from 24. I was very proudly saying, oh, France got this yesterday. So, you know, I'm going to jinx everyone. So I think Argentina wins today. Wins Sunday, but if you know who I'm really voting for. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe our channels. And please, so my boss knows I'm actually productive and helping out, make a new account. Go to bitcoinwell.com/signup, book a time with us. Thank you all. We'll be back next week.
Peace out.
Thanks, guys.